Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate. Now listen to this.
Give me something, Billy. The switchboard is acting like my life. Welcome to Summertime Special Edition.
Call me a joker, call me a fool.
Of Summertime. Welcome to 2010, or is it 2010? I haven't made up my mind yet. I'm your host, Dr. Mark. The number to call to participate tonight, 646-478-3347, a special early drive time edition of Summertime, is a, well, we'll call it a makeup session. And we're going to jump right in because we have so much news to discuss. We want to get our guest on here right away. All the way from the other coast, where the news hits first, we have our friend from YouTube, NSM Doc, Sacromaniac, other names he's been called. But welcome to Summertime if you're there. Let's see if the switchboard is in a good mood right now. Can you hear me? Let's see. Pulling him up again. The thing is blinking all over the place. All right. The thing is spinning. This is like a narration of my day. Oh, there he is. All right, he's there. Cool.
All right, so everybody hears me okay?
Oh, yeah, the BTR is humming along here on a Monday night. I got a feeling the server is going to be getting pinged like you wouldn't believe because of things are going on. So we made it. We made it to 2010. We're kind of in a little bit of a perilous perch, but just to start off, you guys didn't miss the first time we had Doc on. We were heading into the Copenhagen conference last month, and so much has happened in the aftermath of that and over the holidays that it's sort of a potpourri of, you know, WTF happens next, that I'll give Doc the first shout-out because out of all the things that have gone on in the last month, what is the number one blinking on your radar that says this is the next piece of the puzzle that starts to break down this this system that we're in that people should be, you know, tracking and looking at more closely?
Well, first of all, I want to apologize to your viewers first because I was supposed to be on a couple of weeks ago, And my wife was sick, and I couldn't come on because I had to watch the baby. I have an 11-month-old. Actually, she's a year old now. She turned one on the 26th. And so I couldn't be on. So I want to apologize to all of you first because there wasn't anything I could do about that. And I really do appreciate being on the show. To answer your question, I would say that the false flag, or I want to call it a false flag, Flight 235, I think it should be big on people's radar because that's going to be a huge control issue coupled with giving Interpol immunity to operate in America. I think that should just terrify folks, and that really is connected to the Copenhagen conference.
Well, that's two big dots that you're pulling up there. So just so people can kind of get a handle on these things, Copenhagen conference, they came out with a non-binding agreement of these countries. They didn't get what they wanted, really. They got a little bit of a kind of a piecemeal of it, to use a word, where they were, again, if you go back on Doc's site on YouTube, there's so much up there. You could spend a couple of days just getting educated on all the news that is not fit to broadcast. But Agenda 21, all these things we've been kind of batting around the last couple months in the wake of, you know, swine flu, vaccines, flu crane, all these things we've been kind of throwing out there the last couple of months. And now you have a situation where you have these countries that were trying to get that green behavior, that environmentalism, as sort of the international, sort of secular religion, to again, collapse boundaries, remove sovereignty, create a mechanism where your own freedom, your own personal capacity to live your life is now going to be on somebody else's terms. And that got pushed through. I mean, they got something out of it. They ham-fisted it. They're kind of like healthcare. They kind of ham-fisted it through. But in the wake of it, we have the Christmas bomber. Then we have the second one that in Detroit the day later where the guy was in the bathroom and he was questioned and released. And now we've had, over the last week or 10 days, we've had situations like last night over here in Newark where they closed down Terminal C because some dude walked in the exit, didn't get screened, they couldn't find the guy, they shut down the terminal for 5 hours, and talking of sanctions with Yemen. So we're going to get through all those different pieces, but what you're saying is that what people are not reading into what happened with the Christmas bomber is that the underlying message or the next wave of this is to say, well, since we couldn't get what we wanted in Copenhagen, what we'll now do is start to make travel so prohibitive and so restrictive and so invasive that people won't be able to move around as much as they could, and we're going to make it sort of like a police state from you know, point to point. And what's going to be the initial sort of legal aspect of this? Are people going to fight this, or government's going to go along with it under the guise of, you know, this is anti-terrorism?
Well, let's start with Copenhagen first, and I'll work into that last piece at the end there. We were the first ones over at thefreedomlink.org to have Lord Christopher Mocton on, his very first interview when he came back from Copenhagen. And he said that while they didn't get the binding agreements, what they did get was the commitment to the funding and the form of the world government that is to be set up to regulate the green climate. And then they're going to revisit it again this spring in Mexico City to nail down things like a one-child policy, all of those things that horrified people at Copenhagen. The reason they brought those out at Copenhagen was so that the people could hear that now and exhaust their outrage now so that then they could come back again later and pass the pieces that, of course, were outrageous to be heard for the first time now. But upon hearing them a second time come spring, those will be the minor issues because people have already vented their outrage to it now. And so then it won't be as big a deal to them then. And there will be some new things added in, I guarantee you, that will be there to create a new outrage to deflect people away from them, the setup, their next piece of the setup. That is how the Hegelian dialectic works. You know, they install the certain pieces that they want at this time and then exhaust and expend the outrage for the more outrageous pieces so that they can then implement them on the next time, and they'll just keep doing it that way. It's incrementalism. Now, to get on to the second part of your question, whether or not the people will put up with the new amount of control. And you're right there when you say that instead of, because they didn't get all the pieces they wanted this time, that they're now going to try and implement the control mechanisms separately due to these different isolated incidences. If you remember in Australia, it was one incident of one person that went on a rampage with a gun that took all the guns from Australians. So you can see how that they're going to try to work that into this here. And are the people going to stand for it? Well, because only a certain, aside from very rarely, it's a certain upper class of people that do the traveling, you know, that constantly fly. Because let's face it, flying is very expensive. So mm-hmm. The folks that are doing the flying and the traveling, that is also the major voting class too. So they're conditioning them to accept these new controls ahead of time so that when they decide to implement them permanently, to the folks who do the traveling and do the business and go down to, you know, that are stuck in the left-right paradigm watching Monday Night Football every night, to those people it will have become normal by then, and so that it won't be a big deal. I hope that answers
everything
there.
And again, to speak for those people, because I sometimes hang out with a lot of them, sometimes I'm one of them, is this incident that happened on a plane, no less, with two players on the Washington Wizards, Gilbert Arenas, and I can't probably pronounce the other guy's name, where they were playing poker, and there was like $250,000 bet, and then at the arena there was sort of a fake gunfight, but because of the D.C. laws about having any type of firearm, whether it has bullets in it or not, is considered a felony. And this controversy was just kind of floated through the media over the weekend, and it gets into another layer of control, this idea of right to bear arms and being very restrictive and almost punitive to the point of being ridiculous about gun laws. And that's another one of those, you know, pretty inalienable things that we've been running around with for a couple hundred years, that they're starting to say, you're not responsible enough to handle having any guns. So we have to make these gun laws, all these mandatory gun laws, because, you know, there's so many people out there just, you know, shooting wild, and you see all the shootings, and this is a preventative thing, another way to legislate behavior. What do you think is going to be if this case, I mean, it's going to run its course, and I don't even know if the guy's going to get in that much trouble, but to just raise awareness, especially in the D.C. area, that if you're even just holding a gun, you know, doesn't that be loaded, and it's on your person in the D.C., in the district, that's a felony. And to get people into the mindset of being, you know, sort of almost anticipating trouble. So, again, surrender your right to do that, surrender your right to do this. It's that incrementalism again, or is it more of a part of a bigger picture of when they kick in the martial law, they've got us to surrender all our guns, and basically, you know, we're standing there with nothing?
Well, let's talk about that, because that's very interesting, because 76% of the people are against the health care bill. It was almost 80% were against the hate crimes bill. And just about the Copenhagen thing and the whole climate change cap and trade bill, it's almost 60% against that. So the will of the people is being ignored. The will of the people on both sides of the aisle is being ignored. And so there's been some ideas tossed around about how to get them to listen to the public again, because when the government stops listening to you, they are no longer a government for the people and by the people. They are then a tyrannical, totalitarian-type government, which is exactly what the Founding Fathers fought against. So let me explain a couple of these ideas that have been being thrown around by folks about how to accomplish this goal to get them to listen to us again. And the first one was a general strike, where people just took a few days off work and shut down everything. And I believe personally that although that is a peaceful method, I don't believe the government would react peacefully to it. While I support that method, I do think it's the best. There was an idea tossed around, I guess, the beginning of last year that I thought was just absolutely crazy at first. But the more they ignore the will of the people and the more that they just continue to run over them, I have started to warm towards that a bit. And so this thing in this D.C. phony gunfight incident, I think, is being used to prevent something like that from ever happening. And what that was a few militias had gotten together and a few other groups had gotten together, gun rights groups and things, and they had said, hey, why can't we have a million armed man march on Washington? You know, lawful abiding citizens legally carrying their firearms in a march to Washington to protest what's going on. So to me, and believe me, I thought that was a crazy idea last year, but the more we move towards this tyrannical takeover, the more I'm starting to think that that's a really good idea. And I think that this is, I think they may have caught wind of that idea being tossed around. And so this incident is going to be used as a way to prevent anyone from carrying firearms openly in Washington, D.C. That's what I think.
Well, it's like, to me, there was an interview with a couple NBA players that said something like 70-something percent of the NBA players own guns. So they single out this guy who happens to play for the Wizards in Washington, D.C. Seems like more than a coincidence. And now you're telling me that they're probably going to make an example of the guy because, and I remember last summer they everybody was freaking out because people were bringing firearms to the healthcare town hall meetings, and they were like, you know, oh, this is sinister, it's a racial thing, and I was saying, no, it don't look like it. It looks like these are a bunch of people that read the Constitution and they're pissed.
Most definitely. And let's talk about them saying it's a racial thing, too, because the guy they showed in that video, they only showed his little white shirt and the butt of his AR-15. They made sure not to show his face, but on YouTube they showed his face. And that was a very well-spoken, highly educated young black man that had his AR-15 out that was in support. I believe he was even in support of the health care bill. He was lawfully carrying his firearm. It wasn't loaded with rounds. He just had it with him because it's his right under the Second Amendment to keep and bear arms. A lot of folks in big cities don't understand, right? Because there's been so much crime there and things have been hyped so much about guns being bad. It is not the guns that are bad. It is the bad people behind the guns that are bad. Lawful abiding gun owners in America have traveled with their firearms in their pickups and to and fro to the gunsmith or out to the shooting range since the inception of this country. People used to carry them in gun racks in the windshield of their pickup trucks and all that because it's part of our culture. So, but in the cities, that culture has been kind of under assault simply because of crime and poverty, which are two unrelated things. The Second Amendment is not related to crime and poverty. Crime and poverty is related to the social welfare state perpetuating that lifestyle in America.
Now, these athletes, and you see it happening more and more with athletes than with entertainers, is that rather than hire security, they're carrying the weapons themselves. And a lot of times they say, well, again, that's the quote-unquote culture. Do you see that phenomenon as being these guys are getting wise to the fact that they're becoming targets and that people are sort of using that sort of excuse that, you know, if I start in with a guy like this, if this guy happens to be packing, there's going to be more and more of that sort of, not class warfare, but sort of cultural divide between the haves, as in the have guns, and the have nots, because of the fact that there's such a crackdown on these gun laws. I just look at it like, you know, me personally, I don't have a gun, but I'm starting to get the feeling like I'm going to be one of the minorities soon because it seems like if 76% of the NBA players, these are the players, not just their security staff, are walking around carrying guns all the time. It just seems like the culture is becoming almost like it's sensing that the danger is close, that this is not something that's just to be cool or have a gun on you. This is because the so-called protective layer, being cops, and are not necessarily, you know, coming from the standpoint of being doing their job, where things are being allowed to happen, and you know, I just see it being very, very volatile in that area, and it's spreading in the school systems, things like that. But back to how all this relates to, I hate to say it, Climategate, is that it comes down to these boundary issues. And I don't understand how they can put messages out that are alarming. The Yemen thing, for example, was out of nowhere over the weekend. And it was the Brits that went first. And once they found out, you know what, they're raising terrorists in Yemen. Is that shocking news to anybody? Why now is that such a big deal? Where was this the last 8 years?
Well, let's look at a lot of our conflicts that we've had over there in the Middle East right now, and take a look at where they've started. Okay, now if you remember, it was Saudi Arabia that went over there and bombed them first. Now they've allowed us to base planes there. They've allowed us to launch our attacks on Iraq there. They've pretty much been the open door to the Middle East for, let's say, the Western powers, if you will. And so it looks to me like the Saudis started a war with Yemen, and then they brought in their big backup. That basically, I imagine they probably said, hey, we're not going to allow you to stage equipment here anymore if you don't help us in this area. And so to me, I think that right there, that it also freshly puts Al-Qaeda in people's minds. And people need to understand that Al-Qaeda was a computer program list name created by the CIA. Al-Qaeda was never an organization. And the whole group came from America in the first place, putting that group together to fight against the Soviets in where? Afghanistan in
right.
the 80s. So this whole setup, right, has been designed to condition the American people to accept a never-ending war on terrorism. Aaron Russo said it best in Reflections and Warnings. He said that it's a way to create endless war that will never end, so that they can institute control after control after control over the free countries of the world. Because this is a Marxist takeover. This is a Marxist takeover of the world. And Lord Mocton, he called it right on the money on our show when he said that when the Berlin Wall came down, the red flags infiltrated the green movement and changed the color of their flag from red to green so that they could repackage their collectivist message under saving the earth, so that they could again attempt to fulfill the tenets of the Marxist revolution, which is to take over the entire world.
And you know, those fighting words, if you're talking to me, but I guess I'm seeing it from a different seat in the movie theater than most people that are looking at it politically, because I see it as much more of a sort of an idea propagation. It's like almost ideologically, the war for the space in your head is constantly being waged, you know, commercially. So if you're watching any news program, I don't care which side of the aisle you come from, the constant message is fear. No matter what side of the coin you're coming from, it's stability, it's look out for these guys, look out for those guys. And the stuff that you just said about Al-Qaeda, people blow that off. It's like some 60-minute show from 20 years ago, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, that's where this started. Same thing happened with Saddam. We basically raised the whole bath party up, right? Because at the time, our enemies were in Iran with the Ayatollah, and we forget that one. He becomes the big enemy. We always need a visible enemy that everyone can rally around and hate, whether it's him or whether it's bin Laden or in the past Gaddafi. It's sort of like the way the WHO picks a bug every couple of years for everyone to get scared about, and then they can build a vaccine and have a pandemic. And again, if you can get people on that level, now they can't travel because, you know, we're going to stop travel from China, we're going to stop travel here. It just seems to be to restrict movement on a wide global, you know, like you don't want to travel there because the Muslims are over in Germany now. You don't want to go to Michigan because there's a big sleeper cell community there. It just seems like we're breaking apart any sense of cohesion between countries or between ideologies under the canopy of fear. And then what comes right after that is the commercial to go spend money at Walmart. So are we that gullible as a nation that we can't connect those two big dots, or are we just so sort of immune to it in a way because, well, we're all still here and, you know, there is going to be some football and, you know, what are we complaining about? So the tendency is to minimize this and sort of poo-poo it and put it back under the rug, but when it keeps happening, especially, I mean, basically from Christmas to New Year's, there was almost an event every day. And because it was the holidays, it was like scrolling along the bottom, but I kept saying, you know, this is all after the summit. This is all after the little binding, non-binding agreement. And I'm saying to myself, wow, they couldn't get us through the vaccines. They couldn't get us through the treaty. So now they're getting us through this. So what the next step is the privacy issue with body scanning. What have you learned about that as far as how that's going to become implemented? Is it going to be a federal thing or a state-to-state or a country-to-country? How are they going to get that? And right now, international flights, they have these dopey rules where you can't read a book for 2 hours before it just seems bizarre that anyone thinks that that's going to prevent anything. But what are you hearing about the use of the body scanning domestically?
You know, I've heard a couple of different things on it. So I'm just going to speculate on what I think because I'm not positive. But it, like with these other control measures, right? The more that you have to submit to them for something, the more that you will be conditioned to conform to whatever it is that they want to do. It's kind of like the camps in Nazi Germany, and whether folks believe that those were as big as they were or whatever, it's the concept that was used that I'm speaking of. And what was done there is that the folks were taken off trains, they were stripped naked, they were searched, and then they were herded to and fro. And it got to the point where those poor people would go anywhere they were told, would do anything that they were told to do. And so that allowed 10 or 11 guards to control 20,000 people without any resistance because they had been conditioned to take all those things for so long. And so the will to stand up and say no was taken from them. And that's what they're attempting to do with these different searches and body scans. And they've said clearly that the airports are going to be, because so many people travel now, the place to condition the American public. And the rest of the world has been pretty much conditioned to accept these things because their notion of privacy is a bit different than ours. Their notions of modesty are a bit different than ours there than here. So it's not as much a big a deal for someone to scan someone's body and be able to see them naked in Germany as it is here, because in Germany they have swam for years in all the bathhouses, co-ed without clothes. It's like normal. I was stationed over there.
It's European culture. I mean, topless beaches, all that stuff, sure. And again, it goes right back to the sort of the Puritan, sort of origins in America was that, you know, people always think that, you know, the pilgrims came here because of persecution. They were extremists at the time because their philosophy was so, you know, almost like, you know, I hate to say the word, you know, sort of like prudish, but they definitely made, I mean, it's funny, we got that and Australia got the criminals, and so it's like, it seems like it's all going in cycles to me. I'm starting to get a little dizzy thinking about it, but the idea that in order for us to travel either internationally or I guess that would apply if you even fly into Canada or flying in from Canada, is that your ability as a passenger to go from you know, plane to plane, city to city, you're going to face this issue of personal privacy, not just on a, you know, what your stuff has, things like that, but physically. And I just don't know if the American people are going to take to this very kindly, because it is invasive. It is something that you shouldn't have to personally do, but they'll point to 235 and say, "Well, we don't know if you're going to go in the bathroom and blow up the plane." So are people going to sacrifice another level of individuality and sovereignty for the possibility of something like this happening? Because to me, this gets to the heart of what is really happening: is you as an individual do not count anymore. It's only what you can contribute to their bigger agenda, which gets us steering right back into the discussion of the economy, which now we're after Christmas, and in about another week, everyone's going to get hit with their credit card bills and all the stuff they charge for gifts and travel and everything else. And the early returns on the merchants and the small businesses wasn't a disaster, but it was a kind of a light Christmas. People didn't go crazy. And we're still dealing with weather. There's another thing that's affecting the country a lot. All over the Midwest is getting bombed. I mean, we had another snowstorm just came through the Northeast. We have an orange crop down in and it was snowing today, I think, in Louisiana somewhere. So we're dealing with a lot of constraints. So on an economic level, what's the next sort of bridge we have to cross for the American dollar to stay afloat with all of this stuff, you know, kind of taffy pulling it in different directions?
Well, I've had a chance to talk to a couple of guys that actually work in the stock market, and then a few other folks, and their information is really close to the same. So I'm kind of pretty comfortable with saying this, that the Christmas season was smaller than usual, coupled with massive lowering in the each state's collection of taxes because of the massive layoffs that have happened. The net loss to our economy has been huge. And the two guys I spoke to that work in the stock market told me that they're afraid and they don't know what's going to happen over the next 6 weeks or so. That's what they said to me. They had no idea what to say because they were afraid of what's going to happen coming up next. So when you start thinking about things like crops failing as well on top of that, what I would say is, number one, silver is the next bubble. It's my understanding that silver has been sold, leased silver has been resold and resold and resold, and that is going to be the next bubble that collapses. The next Ponzi scheme that's going to be exposed will be the silver market. People that own paper silver, it's my understanding, only own paper because that silver was leased and then resold and then leased and then resold many, many times over, creating a Ponzi scheme much larger than the housing mortgage collapse. And it's also my understanding that commercial real estate is the same state that the housing market was in right before it collapsed. So what they've done to kind of create, because they know these collapses are coming, even though they're not telling the American people, what they've done is they've set up in advance two bailouts. And the first bailout they think will float the economy for 6 months, but the people I've talked to said that will barely last 90 days, and then the market will have adjusted to the American dollar, which by then will be completely worthless. And so when they pass the second bailout that they have either pre-approved, sitting ready to go, or they have already decided on doing, that will have absolutely no effect on our markets and our economy here, which will then force us to have to join into a different, larger, global-type economy, which, of course, has been their plan from the beginning. So I would expect to see the mainstream news telling everyone, buy, 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 it's all roses, so that they can rake in their last few dollars before the wheels come off completely.
No. This is incredible timing because February is when the health care bill goes back into Congress to get ironed out for good. And we also have an Olympics, which is a big TV thing. It's a huge international event, which, of course, is going to bring back this entire issue with travel. Who knows what bug will be propagated through if they're done with H1N1, I don't know. Or maybe we'll see the return of you know, some of those fun things that Baxter Labs was distributing over Kiev last year. So I look at it like, if you're saying economically, we're basically on such thin ice, it's paper thin, and the paper it's printed on isn't worth any money anymore. Yet the government is so just almost ridiculously arrogant that they will bleed us dry on every level, and then we're looking at a midterm election. So if we're sitting here, like you're saying, if this thing pans out the way you're saying, by the time we get to the second half of the second quarter, late spring, say, we're going to be in a free fall. So is Obama that, you know, insulated from these kinds of things, that he doesn't see that that's going to be, you know, first of all, he's taken we've looked at what's going on with the war in Afghanistan and the escalation over there. What will be his message to continue to get support through the midterms if all these things are falling on around him?
Well, you remember George Bush sent everyone a check for a couple hundred bucks, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
So I think we can plan on seeing right before the election something like that occur, probably a little larger than what George Bush did. But I think what they're going to do is they're going to come out, they're going to roll out their new financial system that's supposed to save everything. And I'm not sure whether that's going to be based on gold or IMF's special drawing rights. But if it is based on gold, the people that have no gold will be stuck in an electronic fiat currency system, coming forward. And fiat currency itself is slavery. Okay, fiat currency is worthless. It's backed by nothing but the government saying it's worth this because we said so. And so if that goes to electronic, it's also going to be inescapable. In other words, you won't be able to have a garage sale and make any money. You won't be able to sell personal items to another individual because everything that will be done will be purely electronic. And by the way, an electronic system also fits right in with the green movement. In other words, no paper, reduced. Yeah, so all of those. So I think that the great savior that they're going to roll out for the American people, and I don't believe the American people are going to be offered this until much suffering has been allowed to happen, because that's how you get people to accept something they don't want, through personal pain. So I think that after a few weeks of pain to the American people, they will roll out this new system, and I'm sure it'll be a system that not only is here in America, but Canada, the EU, and other parts of the world as well. I know that China has forwarded that option itself, along with its one-child policy, during the Copenhagen talks. So I think that that's going to be the grand solution that will be presented to the people.
Wow. So when we're not getting strip searched and put through body scanners and having to sit, you know, on a plane, from say one coast to the other, while the guy reading the copy of the Quran is being castigated by the stewardess, our money is going to, but the cash is going to disappear, and we're going to be in this digital gold rush where, again, the fiat money. The first time I heard that word was when they were that Jekyll Island book, talking about the Mandrake mechanisms, which is what the Federal Reserve was based on, where they would, you know, I always was kind of confused and a little bit befuddled why it took a check 3 days to clear, you know, 3 to 5 business days to clear. What happened during those 3 to 5 days? And in that book, he talks about how basically 10% of the money that you deposit is your money. The other 90%, the bank goes and floats for 3 days with this fiat money that's backed up by the Fed and the FDIC. And it's all fake money. And now, as long as you have the Fed to go print more money, they don't have to worry about the note being called in. But all of these things you're talking about would collapse the Fed and supersede it. And that's been something that Ron Paul, some other guys have been propagating for a couple of years now. Do you see that idea gaining traction as a competing mechanism to the things you're talking about? Or is that going to be something that's looked at as being anti-American?
Well, what I see to do with the Fed, the Federal Reserve, right, and if you've noticed, they've gotten cozier and cozier and cozier with the IMF to the point now to where I would say they were pretty much indistinguishable as far as business goes. The Federal Reserve and the IMF are really the bank accounts of the 12 to 16 richest families in the world. And so do I think that that's going to even to be audited or to be closed? No, I think what will happen with them is they will just be put in charge of this new electronic matrix that they're setting up. And that will be, how should I put it? I believe Nancy Pelosi called it the halls of the priesthood there at the Federal Reserve. And I really believe she meant that when she said it. So I think that they're going to be elevated to the representatives of the actual rulers of the world rather than the puppet governments that have been set up to represent them around the world. So maybe some minor changes will be made. Maybe some small audit will be done of the Fed. And they may float that controversy up and to help them present this new supposedly cheat-proof electronic monetary system. Yeah. But as far as abolishing the Fed, I think that unless we the people abolish the Fed and demand that our money be backed by gold or some other commodity, that we will forever be enslaved through the use of fiat currency and debt.
Now, do you see this affecting things like IRS? Because what I see happening more and more, because of the fact that it's choked in bureaucracy and it's just a poorly run entity, IRS, is that with all this happening and with cash being taken out of circulation, as you're saying, because it's evil paper it's printed on, I see it where people are going to go shoebox on this and they're going to say, you know what, screw it, why should I pay my income taxes? Let them come after me because this money ain't worth anything anyway. So I just see that becoming another reactionary thing where it's been I've seen a couple of prominent athletes get put in jail as they've been made examples of for not paying the taxes based on the principle that they really had no right in the first place. Everything I've read about IRS and Federal Reserve and FDIC is nothing more than a squeeze play that they convinced us, just like with Social Security, some of the other policies that came up, you know, pre-World War I around there, that have carried through to now. I mean, we're almost 80 years past this point. Where they've taken our money, and they said we'll protect it, we'll invest it, we'll keep it, and then they go and spend it. It's like we don't get it back. So I just see people as one of their only or their last, you know, ways of kind of resisting this is just say screw it, I'm not going to pay my taxes. Now if this happens on a wide scale or even on a regional scale, do they get tough with these people and make examples of them and make it like something like, you know, this is like they did with the foreclosures and people were just put out of their homes? Or do you see it as being a, you know, like one little thing that people can do to sort of point out the hypocrisy here?
Well, I think first let's look at the electronic money system for a moment before I answer the second part of that question.
Okay.
Now, if they implement an electronic money system, they'll be able to extract all bills from your account immediately. So
yeah.
Let's say things you used to make payments for or had to arrange payments for, now what will happen is they will just take it out of your account, and then you'll be able maybe to allow to get some of it back later if you arrange payments with them. So you could instantly go from getting your paycheck to being completely broke from one bill from somewhere under this new electronic system. So when I say inescapable, I mean inescapable. And so they'll be able to announce to the people that we don't need the IRS anymore, your taxes will automatically come off of this, you know, and they'll show you your health records as being able to just walk into the doctor and they'll scan you and get your health records. So they're going to introduce this as a way to save people from the IRS and to save their lives at the doctor's office and to save the economy from the collapse they created. Now, to get on to tax resisting, if everyone did it or a huge portion of the people decided to do it, it would work. Just as well as a sit-down would work, it would shut things down and it would get their attention. The problem is that the folks that have been trying to do it up to now have been going it alone without any kind of organization. So if somebody wanted to organize the tax resistance movement, I would imagine that every other movement there was should jump on board and help them because that would work. But I don't envision that happening because people are scared. They've seen the examples that were made of people who attempted it on their own.
And again, this is another layer because it sort of, to me, it ties into the way vaccine laws have been moved through. Same thing with money and taxes, is that it starts out as you know, we'll give you some rope. We'll make a deal with you. You know, you can get an exemption. You know, you can get an extension on your taxes. And then it becomes, oh, no, there's penalties now, and there's sanctions against you. And then it becomes, round them up, you're now an enemy of the state. And I just see those things kind of rolling back on people more and more and quickly, where instead of having a dialogue with the bureaucracies, the bureaucracies are dictating to people what the menu is going to be. And once they say what the menu is, and you say, that doesn't sound like something I really want to participate in, you then become the defector. You become the dissident. You become someone who's not going along with the great American way. And if that's the sort of the underlying kind of like agenda, I guess is to use a word, it just seems like that alone should be enough to get people to say, let's do everything. Let's not pay the taxes. Let's get all our guns and march to Washington. You know, let's have a peaceful, progressive, integrated overhaul, because there's millions of us, and there's only, like you're saying, a handful of them. And I don't understand how they, through all of these mechanisms that we've been talking about, we got to go back and look at the Christmas bomber again in a minute, that they continue to scare us. It's not like a mob rule, but it is a majority rule in the sense that if enough of the people, and this is supposed to be a republic, if enough of the people wised up, and again, just the dissemination of the information. You're doing such a great service on YouTube. If people aren't aware of Doc's extensive site, and talk a little bit about the Freedom Link too, because that's something else that you've tapped into the last couple of months that really has gotten you guys turbocharged up there. As far as getting this type of information in the minds of people that otherwise wouldn't see it on the news.
Certainly. My channel on YouTube is Sacramaniacs MC, and I've been up about 2 years. It was more started as a website for our motorcycle club out here, but rapidly turned into something else when Department of Homeland Security came and made us take mugshots and told us we were a terrorist organization. Freaked us out bad. So the channel kind of changed to getting out the truth. Now, the freedomlink.org was just a group of guys that were on YouTube that each had channels, and we got together and decided, hey, let's put together a website and start up a little radio show so we can get the word out to people. So you can catch us over there at the freedomlink.org and our sister channel, Freedomizer Radio, here on BTR. That's also a part of us. So, and you can catch us just about every night a week, around from 3 p.m. Eastern to midnight Eastern, I believe, at either place. Freedomizer Radio, of course, kicks off on the 11th. That was formerly the Proof Negative show, for those people that are familiar with that over here at BTR. So we would definitely appreciate you guys stopping by and checking us out over there, because we cover all this stuff in depth, each little piece. So you'll definitely get a good idea of what's going on.
Yeah, it's again, it's a fascinating thing, because at the same time all this stuff's happening from the top down through mainstream media, it's this social media that's connecting folks that are seeking information that they can act on, because there's so much misinformation. Just taking, you know, Tamiflu as an example, this horrible drug that was bandied about as the only option once you got the swine flu, was to take this Tamiflu. Not only was it a joke scientifically, but they cooked the data so bad that they couldn't even come up with the original information about it in the study. And yet, everybody rubber stamped it. So just that alone should say, you know, this is not really a kosher thing here. Everything seems to be done for a very specific reason, and it usually doesn't have anything to do with keeping me healthy or keeping me, you know, out of harm's way. We've talked about, you know, some of the doses of the H1N1 vaccine that were looked at as being basically neutral and inert and useless down in Atlanta, almost a million of them. So we're at the point now where we're sort of post-swine fear, and now they're redirecting it to the things that we do on an everyday basis, like the plane travel. When will it progress past that? When will it progress to, like we've talked about before, about, you know, putting the chips in our arm and having our papers and all that stuff to go state to state? Because if they can limit country to country travel, that's one thing. But if we can't get from you know, New York to New Jersey without going through some type of a stop, you know, a pullover and show your papers, then it's going to really slow things down. And I kind of see that being the mechanism that the government and the mainstream can use on us unless we have a way to counteract it. And from the looks of the things from what happened with the Christmas bomber, they're not even interested in that.
Well, let's talk about those the climate. I'm going to compare this to the Climategate scandal as well. See,
okay.
Because the Tamiflu thing. Because if you notice, the original data was gotten rid of with Tamiflu, and
yeah.
So now all you have are, of course, the supporters' reports on their adjusted data. And amazingly enough, through the Climategate scandal, you find that is the exact same thing that happened with the original climate data. All of the original climate data is also gone, and so all you have now is this adjusted data from supporters. And so you can kind of see a pattern there. And I believe that, I stay away from putting dates on things, and here is why. Because all it takes is a word from someone in authority to say, wait a week, or wait a month. Uh-huh. And then anybody who has said, this is going to happen next week, suddenly is a fearmonger or a disinfo agent or whatever. So what I like to do is put out the facts of what they're trying to do. Do I know exactly when it's going to happen? Hard to tell. But I do know the Christmas bomber, that was supposed to be something much larger than it was. It was only the extreme quick action of a stewardess with a fire extinguisher that saved that plane from becoming a giant explosion. Because whether he set himself on fire, you know, there's huge controversy about how all that thing went down. I know we had Mr. Haskell on our show and interviewed him about it. And the fire was right over the fuel tank, and it had it burned for another minute or so, it would have exploded the plane. And then in that situation, that would have been a huge enough event to implement all kinds of draconian measures. But because of the heroism of that stewardess, they managed to avert a major incident and to make it the incident that it turned out to be. So on their part, I think that was a big flop. But I believe that there will be some kind of major incident. And I want to remind people that not just Medvedev, but now there's a few doctors here in America and one in Canada that have all said to be expecting a third and much more lethal wave of H1N1, supposedly to begin in the next week to week and a half. Now, how do they get to put dates on things like that without knowing ahead of time? I mean, let's face it. How can you say it's going to be here next week unless you're going to release it next week?
Yeah, it sounds like, okay, it's like a very friendly and cordial version of bioterror. We're going to poison you next week on Thursday. You know, prepare for it. I mean, it just seems like, to me, it's the height of arrogance that they even say these things. But their solution to it will be yet another vaccine or yet another drug that they will cook up that'll poison people even more. And it just seems like people get, like you said before, when they're suffering, they'll take any crap that they hand them as the way out. And if they can eliminate, you know, I think they said something on the order of, I forget the number, of how many million of people had both the seasonal and the swine flu vaccine. Was like a third of the country or something like that, that had been, you know, indoctrinated in that stuff. And if they can get something, if we see anything on the order of what happened over in the Ukraine, anywhere here in this country, people will panic, and that's what I'm sort of like waiting to see of it, what do we get the next Christmas bomber? Because one of the other things about that whole flight, the Amsterdam flight, was that there was a second guy on that first plane that was causing problems. And that guy was never discussed. There's only the Nigerian. There was another guy on that plane, and then the same flight the next day was the guy in the bathroom that was, you know, questioned and released. Is it that overt or inside job or, you know, sort of 9/11 loose change that they let these guys through? Are the security guys in on this to the degree and extent that that would happen, because while they're hunting down the old lady to make sure she doesn't have any lipstick or something, you know, that this guy just walks on a plane with, you know, with chemicals to build a bomb?
Well,
2 days
about,
in a row?
Yeah, let's talk about that for just a second, right? Because there was an action taken that a lot of people didn't know about to do with Interpol. Now, the CIA and Interpol, their job is to combat terrorism and international crime. And
mm-hmm.
for the longest time, all of the training videos and all of the warnings from all of our agencies here in America have been that in these smaller countries is where the security is weaker and the terrorists are getting on board planes. But by removing the protections that were placed in place by Ronald Reagan that conformed them to the Constitution, and don't get me wrong, him just allowing them to operate here I considered to be a horrible, horrible thing. But he at least constrained them to the same restraints as the FBI and others. In other words, they couldn't violate the Constitution. They are now immune from all laws here to operate in America. And people don't understand the significance of that. Interpol does not enforce American law. Interpol enforces international law. And there are many, many, many laws that are against the law internationally that are legal here, including owning of firearms, spanking your child if you so believe in that, preaching certain messages from the pulpit, Holocaust denial, and the list goes on and on. But those are some of the more major ones. But here's another thing. Let's say Interpol has found a guy they think is a terrorist, kick in the wrong door and shoot somebody's dad and kill him. Can they be even questioned about it? No, they can't. They won't be arrested. Nothing can be done. There is no recourse for anyone against them. And if you're taken by them, because of the way that executive order was written, people are considered something that could be investigated. They are now immune from that. So if you are arrested by Interpol, you will just disappear. No one will be able to speak to you. You will not have right to counsel. You will not have right to a jury by your peers. It's what I like to call being disappeared. So here's this international body that enforces laws that are not our own, are now allowed to operate in America with impunity because of these couple of incidents.
What's the difference between them and you know, Gestapo and Siberia? You know, what's the difference?
There isn't any.
Okay, I'm just saying, that doesn't sound like anything different than I've ever seen. It just sounds like another way to repackage it. And under the guise, again, every single time they do this, it's under the guise of protecting us from the invisible terrorists. And we're all potential sleepers to them. So we're all the enemy. We're all walking around. You know, the minute you step in front of it, even now, my last flight back from San Diego, which is a big, you know, Navy port, they always got the guys there at these military cities where they'll have the regular TSA guys, and then they'll have some guy, you know, in fatigue standing there all decked out. And you salute them or whatever you say to the guy. But the seriousness of the way, they're looking at you, my old man in America just trying to get home, as a potential threat. So it's like you move through the scanners and stuff, and, oh, they found a bottle of shampoo. And it's like, you know, and we look at it as hassle, and they look at it as control. This way, all the millions of us traveling, I think it was in the order of 2 million people a day, are traveling in the airports in America. So 2 million people a day are being choked down by this bureaucracy under the guise of protecting us from ourselves. But what they never say is, no, we're looking at you as potentially enemies. We're looking at you as we're protecting you from other people. We think you are them. You are the jihadist that's sitting in over the wing that's going to light himself on fire. Even if you're, you know, an 88-year-old woman, you know, or something. I mean, it's almost like that's why this whole issue of profiling, I'm going to do a whole show on Wednesday, on the whole issue of profiling, brings up every last bit of gunk in the American psyche as far as, you know, prejudice and the racial stuff and all the other things. So where do you see the legalities of that aspect of it going as far as not just screening us in body scans and putting a bunch of layers through it, but the actual profiling process? Do you see that becoming a big time legal issue where people are going to say, you know, enough's enough.
Well, let's talk a little bit about first fear, okay?
Yeah.
This whole thing was started with fear, and the Patriot Act was passed because of fear. And then the next thing was passed because of fear.
Now, when does the Patriot Act, when does that expire? Is that soon?
Actually, I think that they are talking about re-upping it, but they haven't stopped using the tenets that were set down in it.
Right.
But they're supposed to reauthorize it. I believe the 10th was the date that I saw.
Yeah,
maybe a day
up.
Or two other each way than that.
Now, why would Obama be cool with that when he's so, you know, antithetical to Bush's policies, or is he not, where it's going to give the guy, like I said, this is another veiled thing. It's like he's perpetuating his policies in Afghanistan, he's perpetuating his policies with the economics, and then now he's going to go and re-up the Patriot Act, the one, like, huge bellwether thing that says you have no freaking rights, we're superseding the Constitution. And we're going to spy on you all day long, and you're all enemies of the state, basically, to prove it otherwise. But forget presumption of innocence or whatever. So all these things are happening under the guise of instilling fear in millions of people. Okay, go ahead, continue.
Well, most definitely. Fear has been their best tool. So when people are willing to give up their freedoms because of fear, and people have to know, right, that you have much more chance of getting in a car crash than you have of being blown up by any bomber or being in a plane crash or plane explosion or anything. It is such an infinitesimally small percentage that would ever happen to you. But it's hyped so much that people are giving up their freedoms to prevent these things that may never, ever happen to them. It's time for folks to say, hey, yeah, you know, these things suck, but my freedoms are more important to me than worrying about whether or not a terrorist is going to blow me up in the middle of rural Oklahoma. It's not going to happen. So, if it does happen, it's a very small, isolated event, and not large on the grand scale. But the government will use these things to take away your rights, because the idea is. And Maurice Strong, getting back to tying this into ClimateGate, has said very clearly that it takes an authoritarian government like China to effectively protect the world. And China, of course, has been elevated above everyone else by the UN. They get all the awards. Mao gets all the accolades. And Maurice Strong has even moved there because he's the voice of the green movement. He's their quote-unquote messiah for now. And so when he gets up and says, we must have control like China, we must have control like China, well, you can bet that the folks that are in government that are on that side, and there's not – the reason that the Communist Party in America dissolved itself is they said that the Democratic Party took on their platform. So they no longer needed – a party anymore. They just joined them. And that's not to say that Democrats are communists. I don't believe that for a moment. But what I'm saying is they said that their platform has become close enough to where they didn't need their own anymore. So when authoritarian China's government style is presented by the leaders of that party, and they are in control now, then you can understand why these measures are being put in place, because it's going to be that style of government that the UN adopts for the world.
And again, this is another one of these, you know, amorphous blobs like you talked about with Interpol. The UN traditionally, historically, has always been looked at as a powerless, you know, NATO, and almost like a paper tiger. And now, because it's been emboldened by all these other things you're talking about, it's another one of these agencies that there is no appeal from, that you have no recourse. Once the UN says something, you know, basically it everybody agrees to it, and there's no other place to go. So the idea that was coming out of Copenhagen of world government comes from them, and all the other things, all the other policies that you talked about with respect to the Maurice Strong's green movement, all that stuff, it's all very mixed messages of we're saving you, but we're also going to strip you of any individuality, any degree of insulation from an oppressive government, and we're going to model it after China. Now, how many ways to Sunday can they be saying we're taking over before people wake up? Is it just people are so mired down in all their own little local little battles that they can't see the big picture? Was that the design from the beginning, to just put everybody in debt, squeeze them, you know, get them sick, give them no health care, all the things we did in the last 30, 40 years, to the point now where we're so exhausted just living our own little day in our own little part of the world that we can't see this big international, you know, tapestry unfolding? Or are we just giving up from a consensus standpoint that we can't fight the beast?
Well, it's this. Herein is the problem. The plan is much older than people realize. UNESCO has been in control of the school system of the Western nations for about 50 years now. UNESCO is, of course, the United Nations education arm. They have disseminated the curriculums for the last almost 30 to 40 years to the schools. So what has happened is that the atrocities committed by Lenin and Stalin and Mao and Pol Pot has been taken out of the textbooks. So none of the young adults know the history anymore. They don't even know who those people are. I know that Proof asked 10 people if they knew who Lenin, Stalin, or Mao was, and one of the 10 knew who one of them was. And it's because it's been taken out of the education system. So now all anyone sees is this make-up-to-up pretty image of what people see from China in recent times. And, of course, you know, all of the bad things is always censored about them out of the news. So they show China as a developing nation trying to help its poor people instead of what they are, a nation that has enslaved its workers to about a dollar an hour so that they could overtake the world's economies and then clamp down on them. A one-child policy will ensure China supremacy over the world economically and militarily from now until forever if it's implemented. There will be no escaping it. So that's why they're doing what they're doing. And they produce 90% of the rare earth that is used for green technologies. So the green movement also, 90% of the components used to build this new technology comes from China. So they are ensuring world supremacy for China with this whole thing, because the USSR fell apart and they cannot afford America to be the America it was that stood firmly in the face of Marxism throughout the 70s and 80s and actually brought it down, not by force, but just because the economics worked here better. And
well, that was capitalism there. Regulated, though. We're no longer capitalism with regulation. We're capitalism with speculation, so we're not regulated. So now we've become corrupt and imperialistic and sort of a nightmare, which led to 3 or 4 bubbles in the last 20 years. So again, it's almost like we're at that point where, in terms of the war of ideologies, if you're saying the socialism and the homogenization of all these things is spreading quickly because it gives the perception of unity when actually it's takeover. And it's a hostile takeover because they're taking over your right as an individual, your right to do everything, health, money, all these basic things. Education, like you're saying, it's the old propaganda thing where they just take out the stuff that they don't like. At what point will they start to make these regulations on the Internet, where I know they monitor emails and everything else and Twitter accounts, and they pull stuff off YouTube all the time. When are they going to start doing like what happened last year in Iran, where they just shut Twitter down, you know, and people couldn't interact on the web coming out of Iran during the elections? When are they going to just get so overt that all of these transparent ways that they're kind of tweaking the system become revealed? It just seems like they're about to pop. They're about to say, you know what, these people are... we're squirting out of all these little holes, and they're just going to play whack-a-mole with us here. And maybe they take this show, you know, on BTR off the web. Or, you know, when are we going to start seeing that type of aggressive and sort of overt action instead of a lot of this covert sneaky stuff?
That depends on, I guess, the American people. I think that they've tried the terrorist attack, that fizzled, so they can't do that one again real quick. I think that people saw through, you know, two-thirds of the people refused the swine flu vaccine, and I'm
right.
very thankful for them doing that. So that didn't work as well. So but I do think that an actual implosion of the economy will absolutely terrify people, because what scares people more than maybe not being able to feed their kids or not being able to stay in their homes or losing all their jobs? So I can't say that for sure that's going to happen next, but that's what I see.
Well, they've done, like you said, if you're talking about what, and again, we've been talking with NSM Doc from YouTube and Psychomaniac, the 1-2 punch, as you're talking about here, is healthcare comes through in February, right? They sign that atrocity into law, and the insurance companies get all these mandated, you know, healthcare accounts. And the allopaths celebrate because that goes right to Big Pharma, which goes right back to the WHO, right back to the next vaccine they're going to do. So all that's all. I see that truck backed up to 49th Street. The next wave of it, as you're saying, is that simultaneously they depreciate the dollar, which drives up inflation. So we can't handle our bills anymore. Then they go, oh, we'll save you with this digital money, this fiat money, that will then just start plucking stuff out of your account. So you basically are, you know, an economic slave to us, and then we'll just wait for you to screw up. You'll do this, you'll do that out of desperation, and then we'll round you up because the Patriot Act's been rubber stamped, and you can't travel anywhere because you don't have your papers, you don't have this, you don't digitally exist, and it's that herd mentality. And then all that really scary stuff, that the first stuff I saw on your site, which would be the mass graves and the trains in New Mexico and the troops that are being trained, that's the stuff that terrifies me. When you start going on Doc's site, you start seeing they're digging holes all over the place to put us in. That's the Chinese part. That's the part that I really scared, because the ultimate thing you talk about a lot on your site is that the plan is to gut this fish of North America of all of the extra, what do you call us? Something
useless,
eaters?
Useless
eaters?
Eaters, yes, that's what they call us.
The useless eaters. So that they can export a whole bunch of Chinese to live here and have a new China. If people knew that one, would they react? It just seems like all the other stuff doesn't scare us enough to do anything. But if the Cold War worked out, you know, well for us, I guess, in a way, because we had regulation and there was a different America back then. But this America, this corporate America that sells its, you know, jobs all over the place and doesn't really care about, just moves the widgets around. They cut this deal with China the same way they cut the deal with the insurance companies and the drug companies. They basically have said, we want this amount of control, we want this amount of obedience, and the only way to do that is to get people that have been indoctrinated in that culture for, you know, for decades. We don't qualify. We're the useless eaters. So they'll eliminate us one way or the other, economically or through, you know, bioterror like you're talking about with this next strain of H1N1, or through all these policies. And then, again, if we give up our guns and we give up this and we give up that and there's absolutely no recourse because Interpol is going to come in and override our laws, this is like a big shadow that just keeps getting cast over the American landscape. And still, despite all the factors, all the dots that are emerging that are creating this image, I just think the one message that would kind of solve the puzzle or make people see it all is this issue with China and the fact that the UN is tied to it and the UN is supporting it. And the UN doesn't have any, I mean, forget Amnesty International, they have any qualms with saying, yeah, we dig China's act. We like the way they run their ship. I mean, how, if you want to talk, they talk about us being anti-American if we're not down with the Patriot Act. How overtly insulting is it to say to 300 plus million people that are trying to live their lives that little, you know, sheet of paper over there, the Constitution, you could just wipe your butt with it because the Patriot Act supersedes it. Interpol covers anything that doesn't cover, and we're bringing the whole, you know, Chinese paradigm right down on your heads. Well, wouldn't that cause 300 million people or maybe a large percentage of them to say, hell no? Or are we just too powerless? We can't fight them in a military sense, but can we get this on the upswing before the roller coaster starts going downhill? Or are we going to be sitting here having a conversation in the summer, you know, on two cans and a piece of twine because there's no more internet and there's no more way to communicate? Right now we have the capacity to communicate, get people to prepare, but I think at a certain point it's going to become very difficult to get this information across. So what's your battle plan, say, between now and the summer to keep this level of information available to people when all these things are happening to sort of thwart it?
Well, I feel like that once the internet goes down, we've taken great care to network with other groups around the country. You know, I talk with most of the real militia groups and the folks that are going to stand up for the Constitution. So they've developed ways of communication and the ways that they're going to keep in touch with people, because ultimately, if they do shut down the web, then you're only going to have controlled media, kind of like they have in China, where everything is censored and no real information is disseminated. I really believe it's that there already myself, but there are some people that think that there's a bit of real news every now and again mixed in with all the drama on television.
Yeah.
So I think for folks that have not gone out and gotten ready for what's coming, you have very, very limited time to do so. And so I think that you should immediately check out some survival and preparedness videos, whether it's on YouTube or just Google it, and watch a few of those and get yourself ready. Because one thing that can never hurt you is to be prepared for any eventuality. If we're wrong here, that's fine. But if we're not, then you're dead. And
yeah.
It's really that simple.
Yeah, I mean that's you say a lot of that stuff at the end of your talks on your clips there, and I you know, first three or four times I saw it, I went, wow, this guy's as serious as a heart attack. And then I started thinking, oh, Agenda 21. Yeah, I mean, you better be ready, because if he's right, then and you didn't prepare, then you're going in one of those holes.
20 million holes that they've dug in the last year. 20 million just in the last year.
Yeah, that's so science fiction to me. But then when you sit there on your site and you show them on Google Earth, there they are, guys. Why there isn't like an uprising in the street and people surrounding these things with their cell phones taking pictures? I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take. I just, like I said, I think most people are so mired down in their 401k that crapped out a year and a half ago, and the health care they can't afford, and all the other little, you know, like 1,000 cuts that are bleeding them dry. When they see something like this, they go, oh, some crackpot's talking about a hole in the ground. Well, you stay a crackpot, because believe me, you might save the lives of untold, you know, thousands that wake the hell up. So I just, you know, from my standpoint, I thank you for sharing all this stuff on my show, because I'm always at the small end of the funnel dealing with, you know, whatever snivelly things going on in healthcare, which is a joke because it's not really healthcare. It's basically just another rubber stamp to make money for Big Pharma and the allopaths. So, you know, I'm trying to take this show much more towards a mindset of being aware of your surroundings. That half of somatics is self, and the other half is surroundings. And what surrounds us right now ain't friendly. And that's why you don't have to deal with it in a touchy-feely way. You have a very practical approach. You keep your facts pretty much right on the guy wire. And anyone that wants to tap into Doc's work, you know, just head over to his site over there on YouTube and all the links you talked about before. Why don't you just give the folks at the end here just ways to contact you so that we could sum it up and then wrap it up for tonight.
Certainly. You can find us at thefreedomlink.org. Or Sacramaniacs MC, and after the 11th, Sacramaniacs UC on, MC on YouTube. Or you can catch us after the 11th at Blog Talk Radio, Freedomizer Radio. Any one of those three places, you will find me or another individual who's part of the Freedom Link. And all of the information is accessible from whether you want the vaccine ingredient list to the locations of the different mass graves that they've dug, or just to look into the past history of what's going on and where that came from. And I'd like to thank you for having me on. It's been awesome, as always, and I'd love to be back another time.
Yeah, we'll get you on. We'll do something next month when they come back talking about healthcare and see where we're at with all these things we talked about tonight, because I got a feeling it ain't going to get much better between now and then. But, you know, with us out there yapping about it, maybe it won't get much worse. So thanks for joining us here in Summertime. Happy 2010 to you and your family, and we'll talk to you real soon, Doc.
All right, man. I'll talk to you then.
Okay, stay safe. All right. There he goes. Wow. Heavy stuff. Heavy stuff tonight. Like I said, it's a special show for me because, you know, normally I got some author on here yapping about his deal. And these are things that, when you get right down to it, you know, you have a certain worldview about the way life is supposed to be lived. And then when you see these things happening, I mean, I got to admit, I'm a wacko. Okay, I'll admit it to you out here through the ethers. I'm a complete wacko to most people in the mainstream. I don't accept hardly anything that they tell me, whether it comes from the government, whether it comes from healthcare, or whether it comes from what's so-called mushroom education that they propagate to people. Okay? So those three institutions are so, you know, just embedded in almost every aspect of our lives that we sort of take for granted that what their purpose was there is being carried out. The government's going to protect you, the education system's going to make you smarter, and the healthcare system is going to keep you well. Are you out of your minds? So I must complete the loop as we start the year. With, my favorite friend here that sort of just sums up my position on everything we discussed tonight. Someday there'll be justice. Someday there'll be, some new voices out here talking this stuff. And someday we will get, as Batman says,
you filthy criminies.
But for now, we're going to wrap up a little summertime with our friend Doc. And we'll just, we'll see. We'll wrap up with a little Van Morrison here to take us out, to kind of start the year, because we're at that point, folks, where summertime and all of its components are dancing on the river. I'm babbling. So we're going to be back Wednesday night, talk about profiling. Ooh. And see how you can maybe learn a little bit what I do. The somatic method, as we take apart the eco. 9 o'clock Wednesday night here on Summertime. Please join us. Bring your emotional intelligence. Until then, Dr. Mark saying, be yourself and be well. And don't eat yellow snow. Travel light.
It doesn't matter what route you take. Sooner or later, my heart's gonna break. No rhyme or reason, no master plan. No matter, no promised land. This is time to get away. Know you're only two for a day. It doesn't matter to what cause you spray. This is time to get away. Take a for love, whatever will be. But then I keep on searching for immortality. She's so beautiful, but she's gonna die someday. Everything in life just passes away. Cut the time is slipping away. You know she's only queen for a day. It doesn't matter to which God you pray. Let the time is slipping away.
Tuesday, Sabes.